Welcome back to the Arizona Wildlife Federation podcast. My name is Michael and I am your host, and I am going to keep this intro short and sweet because I am all stuffed up and you are going to hear enough of that business in this upcoming conversation with my colleague and your new co-host, Trika Ocean Hawkins. I just love Trika. I love working with her. She is a super interesting person. She encompasses all of the wonderful things that the Arizona Wildlife Federation is about. And of course, that's going to be wildlife, habitat, outdoor recreation, public lands, all the things that we love this state about for, something like that. Anyway, I'm going to cut this short because I sound terrible, but I promise you're going to enjoy this show with Trika. Her presence and her personality certainly make up for my stuffy nose in this conversation. But yeah, stick around, enjoy, and I will see you after the show. I guess I should start with an apology for my voice and the coughing that's going to occur throughout this talk. And I believe that's the same for my colleague I have here with me today, Trika. I mentioned to you folks, you listeners out there, a couple weeks back that I was going to bring my colleague Trika on as a co-host for the show. Now, when I say co-host, I don't necessarily mean us together all the time. We might do shows together, or we might not. But ultimately, what's going to happen is Trika is going to bring you a new voice, new ideas, new guests, different than what I do. So it's going to be a great thing for the podcast. And I'm very, very excited to introduce you all to her today. So with that, Trika, introduce yourself. Tell us who you are.
All right, I'll do that. But I'll also start with saying I kind of have this nagging hack, so I apologize.
Yeah, if it gets out of control, we'll just keep it short. But.
Yeah, we'll be like all right. You said. So, but I am, like Michael said, my name is Trika, the full name Trika Ocean Hawkins. I've been with Arizona Wildlife Federation for about, well, now over 10 years. I'm currently our conservation programs director.
Yeah. And the reason I picked Trika for this is because she is interested in all kinds of cool stuff. She is gifted with, I guess, the gift of gab. I mean, she's a good talker, but always interesting to talk to and fun to talk to. At least I think so. So I'm pretty sure you guys all will too. So let's hear more about you, Trika. Where are you from? What brought you here? What do you love about the Arizona Wildlife Federation? I could go on and on, but you get the idea.
It's a very long story, so I won't go too deep, but I guess I'll start by saying, when you say, where are you from? That's always a hard thing for me to answer because I was an Air Force brat, and I was born in the Philippines, lived in Texas, lived in Thailand, lived in, we were stationed in Arizona many years ago when there was Williams Air Force Base. So I traveled all over the world as a youngster, and I think especially doing that in my formative years really opened my eyes to, you know, the diversity of people and wildlife on the planet. I think that is something that really formed who I am as a curious and interested person.
Yeah.
We settled in Arizona. I'm not going to talk about years, but I ultimately went to the University of Arizona studying wildlife ecology, and that's what I got my undergraduate degree in. But I needed one of those gap years, but that was before they had such a thing called a gap year. And I spent my gap year as a four-year gap year living on the beach in Mexico, guiding natural history and diving tours. And really, I kind of retired right after college and had four wonderful years, but eventually began to feel like I wasn't contributing, wasn't really using my education. Mm-hmm. And through a roundabout way, ultimately was hired as the education director for Hawk Mountain Sanctuary in Pennsylvania.
I hiked through there once.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember you saying
it. Yeah, I think I still got a patch floating around somewhere.
I still do too. An arm patch that says Staff Hawk Mountain. So I spent 3 years out there, loved it, really formalized my passion for environmental education, which is where I really focused my wildlife education knowledge, I guess. But I really missed the Sonoran Desert, you know, there in the overcast skies of the upper Appalachian Mountains, and ultimately came back to Arizona and started a nonprofit environmental education organization. And after 25 years kind of guiding and being a part of that organization, I was really missing being in the field and being actively involved in conservation versus being a curriculum developer and focusing on urban education, and went back to get my master's in conservation biology. And through an interesting roundabout way, came onto the board of Arizona Wildlife Federation. And whilst taking a break from working full time, was offered work through us, through AWF, and eventually left my other organization, and then had to leave the board to come on as staff for AWF. I think you asked a couple other questions in there. That doesn't make it easy. Why I love it? Because I'm working with and for wildlife. Yeah. And that's truly my passion.
Yeah.
I'm slightly feral anyway, so as much as I can be outdoors, and not only working with and for wildlife, but also getting to engage with people. And whether that's hands-on projects, volunteer projects, boots on the ground, conservation efforts, or education programs, getting to engage with both wildlife and people to share my passions.
Yeah. You know, I often brag about our staff, about our board of directors as well. But, you know, we work together, you know, almost on the daily as a staff. And I'm very, very proud of the fact that I feel like everyone on our staff carries that passionate center, pragmatic, nonpartisan ethos of our organization. And I just, yeah, I get as much mileage out of that as I can, because I think it's great. And you're I think we all are just really good representatives of this organization and you know, how it views itself and how it approaches, you know, Arizona and conservation and our wildlife.
Boy, I couldn't agree more. As our staff grows as well, that magic seems to continue amongst all of us. And we support one another. We all have this same mission and same passion. And it's fun working together. And I know it's fun how we all get excited about whether it's this campaign or that project or this program. I really feel like we're a team, and I think that makes us all the more effective.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I'm terribly proud of it. But all right, so we're here to talk about you. I want people to get to know you. So tell us about, you know, you expressed your love for the Sonoran Desert. I completely understand it. It's a magic place, especially in contrasting with those gray eastern winter skies. Well, are beautiful too in their own right. You get used to the sunshine out here. So tell us more about what you love about Arizona, maybe some of the wildlife. And then after that, let's talk about some of your interests, because that's one of the reasons I'm excited to make you a part of this podcast, because you have a lot of cool interests.
Well, thanks. And boy, there's so much to say about this beautiful state, isn't there? I think one of the things I really love about it is the diversity of our state. And I pretty much love all environments for whatever beauty or magic or wildlife and plants they have. But there are very few states where you get such a range of different habitats and ecosystems across the state. And when I think, say, you know, flying, many of us have flown over the country, I'm always getting a window seat. And you look down and, you know, the Midwest goes on forever and it's kind of flat and the same. And when you're out east, it seems like endless trees and then a lot of endless cities. But out here, man, just going across the state, it's so quickly so different. And we can experience alpine forests here, and we can experience some pretty extreme low desert habitats as well. And I really love that about our state. And I also tend to be a Westerner at heart. There's something about the open landscape that seems to also be a part of most of the people out here. Don't know how to explain that, but I think a lot of people probably get it too, just hearing that. There's an openness to Westerners that I think if you get it. And I appreciate that. And maybe it's because while there are certainly some deep indigenous ties here, there's also a lot of people from all around the country and all around other countries that live here and bring a diversity of perspectives. And I love that about our state too.
Yeah, people. We got a lot of transplants, but that's people that want to be here, you know?
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that matters. It creates a happier populace. When you throw in 43% publicly accessible public lands, though, that's the cherry on the top, you know, that allows all of those folks that want to be here to get out and enjoy this landscape.
Yeah, you're certainly right about that. That's something I love about it as well, is that pretty much not far from anywhere you are, you can get out and enjoy some public lands with this knowledge that, you know, by saying public lands, that means they're your land and my lands. And when you really understand that, boy, that's something I truly value anyway.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's I'm preaching that on every corner I stand on. You know what, Trika, it's occurring to me, you know, here I am saying, oh, I'm going to bring on Trika to add this diversity, you know, this voice. But as you talk, I'm like, well, shoot, you know, we kind of both really like the same stuff, but maybe you can just bring a different angle, you know, but no, I'm joking, of course, sort of. Clearly you're going to have different takes on things and different interests than I do, even though we do both appreciate all this wonderful big picture stuff that we're talking about. I think folks are already understanding why you would be really good at this, but let's add to that. Tell us about some of the things that you're interested in, because I think you're always going off on some kind of bushcrafting class or some kind of thing that's just cool. So tell us a little bit about that stuff.
Will do. And I'll tell you about some of those things and also mention some ways that I think we bring a different perspective. And those of you listeners out there that know Michael know what a passionate outdoorsman, sportsman, hunter he is, and a lot of your guests come from that arena and speak to that arena. I mean, granted, you've had a diversity of awesome programs.
Oh, I do a lot of hunting and fly fishing, let's be honest. Just to add to where you're going with this, we're also representing different regions of the state, you know, while I'll do, you know, fire related podcasts or mushroom or hunting related podcasts, mm-hmm. you know, those might not speak to folks down in Southern Arizona.
Yeah. So. Good point. And also as a woman, I'll be bringing a woman's perspective, but also that's a passion of mine is women in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And that means women hunting and different women's hunting programs. I'm also, especially given our Bridges to Bow program, but my personal passions and background anyway, I'm very interested in inclusion in the outdoors. And I'm very both active as an ally in that and would certainly be bringing speakers, guests to discuss that, whether it's issues, but more, I'm always wanting to focus on positive programs and solutions and things to really motivate and inspire us in those efforts.
Yeah. Well, while you're thinking, I'll add that, you know, folks that listen to this show, you know, I get guests and I talk about things that I find interesting, and those are positive things. They don't see the dark side, the unfun side of conservation and the work that we're doing, you know, going down to the Capitol and pushing back against these bad public land bills and, you know, working on different campaigns for the betterment of anyone who enjoys the outdoors, the betterment of wildlife and the betterment of, again, keeping public lands in public hands. You know, that is the less fun but very important side of things that folks aren't necessarily seeing.
Boy, I sure agree with that. I think very few of us really understand the work that goes into advocacy. And even if you see our mission and how important advocacy is to our AWF's mission, I think so few people really understand what that means and how active and busy you are in reaching out to our state and federal legislators and meeting with them so that they understand what I know you're advocating for the sportsman's voice and for wildlife and especially science-based. And so few legislators really understand those things. So if we're not in their face explaining those things to them and saying and sharing what's important, then they're not going to know. They'll go to some bill and just vote off the cuff. But so it's so important, the work that you and Scott and other of our active advocates do, and especially those, you know, of our constituents, that when you reach out and say, hey, here's some bad public lands bills, you can take action by all you got to do is fill out this form. It's ready to go, or you can edit it and add your own voice. But boy, that makes such a difference when our voices are heard. And so I feel like AWF and you, Michael, have been great leaders in this and getting people engaged. And you've made such great relationships with our policymakers. It really makes a difference.
I appreciate you saying that. It doesn't always come out in the wash the way you want to. We have a very partisan legislature, and sometimes you can testify in the most clear, concise manner, laying out perfectly why a bill is bad and why it does not represent Arizona citizens. And a lot of times, you know, those folks are still going to vote with their party. And it's an unfortunate situation that we're in. I would like to see a little more, little less extremism down there and a little more pragmatism. And, you know, that's we as a populace, that's our job to get the right people in there and push them in the right direction.
I totally agree. And that reminds me of something that's really a lot of interest to me, and that's collaborative conservation. That's what my master's thesis was on, my master's study. And I have experienced how collaborative conservation, folks coming to the table from seemingly opposing sides, if you will, but coming to the table and agreeing and making things happen because of wanting to see the same kinds of positive outcomes. When you agree on a goal, and especially when wildlife are related, doesn't matter which party you're coming from, anything about your background. Really what matters is that you share a goal and you do what it takes to realize it. And so I actually have a few things up my sleeve that I'd certainly like to bring some guests on to have that discussion about collaborative wildlife conservation.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see what kind of folks you bring on. Well, we got sidetracked there with serious stuff. Again, I still want to hear about your projects and the things that you do. The last time I saw Trika in person, of course, you know, Trika's in Tucson and I'm up here near Flagstaff, but we have quarterly board of director meetings around the state where we'll all get together in person. The last time I saw Trika, she pulled out, I think it was a Morrican knife, in a pintail head sheath, pintail duck head sheath that she was really proud of and showed me. It was super cool. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel like that encompasses who you are, Trika. And I want to hear more about that side of Trika.
I actually love that. Yeah. That's a little Moro knife. Those are these really sweet Swedish blades. And yes, I made that sheath out of a pintail duck that I had scalped. A friend had actually harvested it and brought it to a duck roast. And so I was saving all these duck scalps or the duck heads to scalp them and make different cool things with. I made that. And that wasn't my first sheath like that. But that's part of this background passion I have in what's referred to as original skills or traditional skills. Some people call it primitive skills, which kind of I think we're getting away from that term. Or ancestral skills. Basically, these are activities I think that go way, way back to pretty much everyone's ancestors, how we clothed ourselves, how we made fire, how we made tools, how we hunted. I have several addles that I've made and enjoy throwing darts with. And I have a longbow made out of Osage orange. And
Did you make that bow?
I didn't make that bow.
I'm really excited about making myself bow.
That's right. I need to share my
stave when I go back to Missouri this year.
Yeah, I'll bring that bow next time we get together.
I'd love to see it.
It only draws around 35 pounds, but it was just a great little bow for me. And a friend had made it and let me shoot it at a competition, and I won. And so it's all right. Yes, okay, I'll buy this off of you. It's just too good of a bow. And I went on for several years to win that competition with that bow. But I also, other skills that I enjoy along those lines are, say, brain tanning. And I've brain tanned deer hides and coyote and squirrels, hair on for those fur bearing animals, and then more like buckskin with deer hide. And so a lot of hunters I know, and I know you as well, will send out your animals to, you have a
tanneries.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. You have a commercial tanner that you, reach out to. I'm really into doing that stuff myself. Now, I haven't done a whole lot, and I know you shared with me, I don't know if it was yours or your wife Mary's deer hide. It's still in my freezer.
Yeah.
Total confession.
Sure.
Because it's a lot of work, but the product is just, there's nothing like brain tanned buckskin.
Yeah, I'd love to see some because, boy, you know, those chemicals in that machinery really do a good job too.
They do, but so I got to bring mine. I'll bring my whole kit of things to share with you because there really is. There's a softness and quality and character of buckskin that you don't get in these chemical tanning.
Yeah. I'd like to see it. You know, I've dabbled on and off. When I do it, I call it bushcraft,
right,
skills, but I mean, you know, I've done hand drills, I've done bow drills, you know, something like a hand drill that takes, takes practice. And then you get a bunch of blisters and you can't practice for 2 weeks, you know? So it takes a while. There's a learning curve to that stuff. You know, and picking out the right materials, the right plants and the right condition. But I've gone on and off in it, dabbled in it, but I've never like jumped all in because I know my personality and I'll just go down that rabbit hole. Yeah. And everybody will roll their eyes and say, of course he did, you know? So I don't know. I got enough hobbies, but I absolutely think it's the coolest stuff in the world.
I like that as well. And that's, I find myself really getting into and put a lot of time into, for example, I also am very interested and have practiced, say, plant medicines, right? And I'll make salves and oils and tinctures out of plants that I harvest. And I'm, I could spend all my time doing just that. So I'll get, I have all, this whole apothecary, but then I get busy in something else. And so there's still my poplar buds over there that are still being infused. And oops, I better get on that. So it's, you know, I love interested people. I think people that are interested in many things, they themselves are interesting. But a lot of interests can, it's hard to focus sometimes. But I, that is another, and you had mentioned that, say, with, and I do like making fire from say, bow drills. I'm no longer that astute at making a fire from just a spindle on a fireboard, you know, not using a bow. I just don't do it often enough. But you had mentioned that, to me, the additional beauty of that is knowing exactly what species of plants work best to do that. And that means you really need to be intimate with your immediate environment. What plants can I use here as a spindle? Yep. And then it's different in northern Arizona than southern Arizona, right? So I'm just so enamored with that study and those pursuits.
Right. Yeah. It's cool. You know, I've been a one trick pony my entire life, you know, since a young child, as long as I can remember. All I've done is wildlife and the outdoors, natural history, if you will. But you know, even, I don't know, that might sound narrow to some people, but oh my gosh, I will never scratch the surface in all my years. You know, I will die an old man, still unsatisfied, still wanting to explore places and things and ideas, you know. There's just, yeah,
I couldn't agree more. And I have to say that my earliest memories, when we were stationed in Texas, it was catching what we called then horny toads, catching horned lizards in the vacant lot behind my house. That was a passion of mine at like 4 years old. And then in Thailand, living in Thailand and catching these huge praying mantises. I mean, they were so big. Yeah. And actually that led to a big lesson in my life. I especially remember, and I was still pretty young, I would catch these praying mantises and, you know, make pets out of them and what have you. I'd bring them inside and they almost always died because they didn't like the air conditioning. And that was when I really realized that wild things need to be wild. And I kind of lost that obsession with having to capture and hold everything.
Right.
But that's when I really became more of an observer and appreciator of things wild. And I feel like even in my own yard, I do things to attract wildlife and birds, especially to my yard. And I have this like, they're part of my family. I see them in my yard. They're visiting here. And that makes me, I'm perfectly happy and satisfied knowing that they exist. I don't have to have them in a cage inside, but.
I think that's something that folks age into because, you know, while I completely agree with you, I'm still a huge advocate for sacrificing some toads and some lizards for little kids to drag home, throw in a bucket or throw in an aquarium. Cause boy, that stuff really lights the fire. At least it did for me. You know, I've got so many stories regarding like for instance, your praying mantis that didn't like the AC. I remember I brought a Walmart in my small Missouri town had a big old tank full of lobsters and holy hell, did I want one of those lobsters? But I didn't want to eat it. I wanted it for a pet. And I took it home and filled up a 10-gallon aquarium, you know, for this big old lobster with like warm tap water. Because in my child's mind, it just made sense. And yeah, that wasn't the case. I think they prefer it cold and salty. But yeah, that poor lobster, he didn't make it long at all. and you know, there's been other animals that have met their demise in my childhood containers. But you know, in the end, that also created a person who, you know, even if I didn't work in conservation, I would still be working in conservation. You know,
I get it.
So,
and I can imagine Thailand.
Oh, right.
Reticulated pythons, water monitors at like local parks, king cobras. Oh, man.
Crates.
I got to get over that part of the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was a time when I was a child that a crate came into our compound. I didn't know what it was. And it went, it slithered right. It was huge. I mean, what, I'm 5 years old, maybe six. Slithered right over my foot. And
snakes don't slither.
Well, Trinka. It did. It what a, it, and I swear in my memory, it was doing an up and down kind of, you know, like you see in cartoon kind of movement.
Yeah.
I was fine. It, you know, just kept on going. Yeah. It was moving right through. And but I, yeah, we lived in a wild place. Even though we were in a, you know, Bangkok, kind of an urban setting, we were.
Yeah.
It was very tropical and wonderful. Yeah,
you can go looking for reticulated pythons in the sewers under Bangkok. I mean, it's crazy.
I
you know, snakes.
I wanted to throw out. We had some while there. We had a variety of tropical pets as well, like some mynah birds. And I'm with you. I think that getting that intimate experience with animals is really important to developing a love for animals, which ultimately leads to, I think, feelings of stewardship and conservation for wildlife. And that's a tough thing. I am not one of those hands-off educators or guides or what have you. But that's a hole we won't go down right now. I'm just a very hands-on person. And I definitely believe in giving people opportunities to directly engage. Versus just observe.
Well, that you know, that's one of the reasons that, you know, there's great conservationists from all walks of life, right? With varying different levels of interest and intimacy with wild things and places. But I talk a lot about hunters and the hunting community because of the amount of, one, money, and two, boots on the ground work they do for wildlife. And, you know, it's my hypothesis that that comes directly from that personal relationship they have with the wildlife, you know, and people that are just observe things, you know, on their television or through a window of their car or whatever, they don't have that intimate connection. And I think it's can be clearly and statistically laid out that they're not dumping the money and putting the time into it that those that have that connection do. So, yeah, I'm a huge advocate for it. Yeah. Take some toads home. Take some lizards home. Throw them in whatever container you have. Poke some holes in a shoebox if that's it, and enjoy them. Try to let them go in a healthy, in a healthy fashion where they will do well. But you know, if not,
you know, and that's reminding me. I grew up and also went when I was in at university at the U of A. It was still in an era where we did a lot of collecting for my mammalogy class.
Oh yeah.
Oh, we had to put up 20 different small mammals as part of mammalogy. Mm-hmm. So that was that. I mean, mostly it would be like various rats or mice or whatever, so that we learn how to make study skins, right? 20. And that means I had a job anyway, trapping wildlife for a study, small mammals. So I had plenty of you know, animals to put up, but that's unheard of now to ask somebody to go out and kill 20 animals, even if it's mice or rats or whatever, because they have to be different species for your collection. And then also when I studied marine biology, and I'm reluctant to even share this, but we would go into the intertidal and the tide pools, and to do a fish count in a tide pool, we would literally poison the tide pool with quinoline, everybody floats up.
Float them to the top.
Everybody, the fish float up to the top, and you collect. And that's totally frowned on now. I'm embarrassed to even admit that because we don't have the luxury today of killing everything we want to study. And that was the mentality of early biologists, right? And I was on that cusp of change. But I also have to admit that
John James Audubon went around shooting birds all over the place.
You know? Bird in the hand.
I'm sure there's still a time and a place where a scientific collection is warranted. With that, our museums, our universities, they're pretty stock full of critters. There's good collections out there already that, you know, we can still use for asking and answering questions and then the scientific community. So I don't know if it's warranted today to go out collecting everything.
I agree. And then it challenges us to find ways to study animals, you know, in their environments. And
yeah, you know, with that said, though, here's another like weird one that folks would have varying opinions on. But replacing dissection of real animals with models in classrooms, you know, we are a much more progressive society today, and we're very sensitive of everyone's feelings. That's a good thing. But boy, there's something to say for, again, that hands-on tangible connection. And we're talking feral cats. We're talking earthworms. We're talking frogs. You know, we're not talking endangered species. In a lot of cases, we're talking about feral species that need to be removed from an ecosystem. And this is a way that they can be utilized for a good thing, you know.
I could see us getting in trouble with this part of the discussion. But I'm with you. I really think if one is going to go into this field, it's really invaluable to be able to have that hands-on experience with real animals. And I also know that some animals are raised specifically for that. Feral pigs fetal pigs, not feral pigs. I remember dissecting a fetal pig, and there are plenty of options for getting those from animals that would otherwise be offed anyway. I'm not that proponent of a model. I still think in our time, there are enough resources that can still allow for hands-on with real animals.
I think so, too.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And, you know, I can see how it can open many cans of worms.
In doing this podcast, and again, if I'm going to go around touting our pragmatism as an organization, then, you know, that doesn't mean I get to tiptoe around real things. Yeah. You know, we talk about feral horses on this podcast.
That's a
very, very passionate subject for folks, but you know, and you know, we talk plainly about the only real solution to the feral horse problems involves dead horses. And that's hard for some folks to hear, but that is the reality of the situation.
Or everybody adopting one.
Sure. Yeah. You know, then we have, you know, lion hunting, which from a scientific wildlife management perspective is perfectly justifiable. But for some reason, you know, the same people that could adamant supporters of shooting an elk or a deer and bringing it home and eating it are going to have a problem with shooting a cat and bringing it home and eating it. But again, from a scientific perspective and a wildlife management, there's no difference. You know, as long as those populations are managed appropriately for those populations, we're good, you know? So talking about all kinds of controversial things.
Science is my bottom line too, really. When it comes to things like that, even though I have another, I wouldn't necessarily call it scientific, but I have this deep, one could say, spiritual connection with the natural world. And that's a really important part of my relationship with the natural world. I don't divorce that from science, because I find the two very compatible. And I know we always say as an organization, you know, our decisions and actions and everything are science-based. And for me personally, that's an important part of my belief system, my decisions, everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm such a scientist at heart, and there's so much a truth in science, and I'm talking about good science. And I know that our wildlife managers in Arizona do good science. We really do know population sizes and how many animals of one species can be harvested in what area of the state. Boy, they're doing good work on that. They're doing great work because most of our populations are growing. There's evidence. That's science. And yeah. That I'm proud to work with an organization that's a defining part of our mission.
Yeah, you and me both. Well, not to put you on the spot, but do you have any big plans for the podcast? I mean, do you have subjects that you want to cover, interesting people that you want to talk to?
Now, you know me. You always say, oh, you're kind of more organized than I. Of course I have plans. That's not putting me on the spot. Yeah. The first thing I start doing is making plans. I'm kind of like that. yeah, I do. And that kind of organized nerd that I can be, I've kind of been, what would I say, couching the different plans, the different guests and the different topics under several different strands. And you and I can talk about this more, say, offline, but I think maybe it'll help our listeners kind of know, oh, we're going to be in this strand in this upcoming podcast or what have you. But my general strands, and I had kind of mentioned that already, one is diversity in the outdoors. And I mentioned mm-hmm. both women in hunting and women in outdoor pursuits, but also BIPOC. Black, Indigenous, people of color, and inclusion in the outdoors.
Good.
And then I'm also real avid about, I guess I'm calling this strand, if you will, characters. And I'm talking about both wildlife and human characters in conservation. And so I have some ideas about some focal species I would like to bring guests to speak about, focal Arizona species, of course, and the conservation programs around those species, whether it's reintroduction.
Why didn't I think of that?
Well, you've done That's some of that, idea. Dude. I know you have.
Yeah, I know, but I haven't like thought about it along those lines. Like, hey, here's the theme. You know, today we're going to do a show on ringtails with a ringtail expert and talk about what ringtails are and their conservation. You know, there's, golly, endless.
I know. Yeah. Well, we'll get All really right, well, organized and have a good
I'll
plan
stay
here.
Off of that and not steal it from you.
I'm going to have to play Bao Ying Chum. What is that? Paper, rock, scissors to I get this species and especially ringtails, you know, that's.
You know, we should try when we do get together for those quarterly meetings, try to build a podcast out of it too that we could both do.
Oh, absolutely. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, I think so too.
Do you want my two other stands or no?
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
So, I've kind of conservation education is big for me. I've done environmental conservation education for many, many years of my professional life. And I know a lot of folks that are doing great work and would like to share some of those and ways to connect people with nature, focusing on that. And then the last thing is some highlights of citizen conservation projects. And like under that is Garden for Wildlife. I think we've, and you did a great podcast on pollinators. With Steve Buckman and help me, Bruce.
Oh, shoot.
And Bruce. That was an awesome one.
Those guys were great. Yeah.
That was so great. But we can definitely, we've got a lot of contacts and folks that are really heavily involved in Gardening for Wildlife. Yeah. And that's another way to inspire listeners to engage in that. And various other things that, such as our volunteer programs and other organizations, our affiliates volunteer programs, ways that we can involve folks hands-on and highlight some cool examples.
Awesome. Sounds wonderful.
I'm done. That was four strands. I'm not going to list everything under those. Those were just the general areas. I don't want to give anything away.
No, I like it. So for folks listening, don't get too excited too quickly because I think we're aiming for potentially Trika doing her first podcast sometime next month in May, maybe. Could be even be early June if we would drag our feet, but we will get her equipped and get her rolling sooner or later, I promise. But what do we leave out, Trika? Anything else we want to talk about before we go?
I think we've done a good intro here, and you made it nice and easy, Michael. Thank you.
Cool. Well, I'm excited about it. I just think you're a wonderful person, a wonderful character, and I think people are really going to enjoy having you as a host. Hopefully they don't enjoy it more than they enjoy me, though.
I'm a little jealous. Well, there's
a good chance of that, though. I'll prepare myself.
You've been building a great following, and together, and some of your listeners that, you know, my approach or topics might not be the top of their list, but we'll bring in more new listeners as well. Yep. And I think we'll just find a good balance overall, and hopefully everyone will learn something and enjoy it.
Yeah. We'll still have plenty of hunting and fishing for my sporting folks. But you know, I think, you know, even for the most diehard sportsman, and one of the problems with hunting and fishing is like you know, some folks have an insatiable prey drive. I'm one of them.
Yes, you are.
And when you get a target, you know, in your mind's eye, that's all you think about. You know, it's been said that, you know, hunters will sit up in a tree stand for 10 hours and not even know what kind of tree they're in. And unfortunately, that's the truth. And, you know, I've spent a life in natural history studying all flora and all fauna, so I'm in a pretty good place. But I get it, because when you're out there and you're after one thing, that one goal is just overwhelming.
I admit I can get that way too. And I didn't even talk about being a spear fisher. And while I have hunted both birds and, as you know, large game, I love spear fishing. And I think more than anything, that is where that prey drive really comes out in me. And I guess because I like free diving and spear fishing. So you've got this like one breath and one shot and one animal. So it's just so intense. And I understand that, but I do know for you that, okay, and then that happens next month and next month. It's yours definitely a little more, what would I say, rabid than I with that prey drive, but
it's a good problem to have.
I do understand it.
My life is full of fun and excitement and things to look forward to. So, so I can't complain. But all right, Treka. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited for you to get going in this. And I think you're going to be just a killer at it.
And I look forward to us doing some podcasts together.
Awesome. It's going to be fun. All right. Well, then folks need to just hang in there and wait for that first show. So. All right. Thanks, Treka. Okay. Thanks for coming on and introducing yourself. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Bye now. We'll see you.
You know, I have so many wonderful and interesting guests on this podcast. I always wrap up, you know, talking about, you know, hey, I told you so. I told you this person or these people were wonderful and that you would love them. And I think I'm pretty accurate with that. But this is the first time I get to do it for an additional host to the show. And that's pretty exciting. I think Treka is going to bring a breath of fresh air to the show. And, you know, just, you know, I've explained it before. I do a lot of hunting and fishing stuff. And I know I do a lot of stuff. I'm interested in a lot of stuff, but I tend to lean on that pretty hard. And I think Treka is going to bring a whole new side, a female perspective, you know. And I can only imagine good things to come for the Arizona Wildlife Federation podcast and for you, the listener, having Treka to be part of this. So I'm sure that you enjoyed that show. I'm sure that you are intrigued with Treka as I am, and I'm sure that you cannot wait for her first show to come out. You will have to be a little bit patient because we're looking at May, potentially even early June. So be patient. It's going to be worth the wait, I promise you. And for me, I'll see you again in 2 weeks with another show from the Arizona Wildlife Federation podcast. Don't forget, you can check us out online. I will leave a link in the show notes. You can explore, you know, all of the work we do, whether that's advocacy, whether that's boots on the ground, working to better habitats throughout the state, or, you know, our education programs like Becoming an Outdoor Woman, which we talked about in the show. So get on our website, browse around, check all that good stuff out. And if you are so inspired, it would be great if you would consider becoming a supporter so you could get our quarterly glossy magazine, this last issue that just is, it's coming out. It's about ready to go to the publisher. It's all going to be a public lands focus with some great articles from some great authors that are friends and colleagues of our organization. It's a good one. And, you know, if you become a supporter right now, you might be able to get that magazine just in time. All right. With all of that, I will see you again in 2 weeks. Thank you for listening.